This is BBC News from London. Buckingham Palace has announced the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. In a statement, the palace said the Queen died peacefully at Balmoral this afternoon. The King and the Queen Consort will remain at Balmoral this evening and will return to London tomorrow. BBC Television is broadcasting this special programme reporting the death of Her Majesty the Queen.
Welcome back to Head in the Office, everybody. By that intro, I think you can tell what the theme of today's episode is going to be.
Not only that, but it's also a very special day.
This it is.
Day that we're recording. Not only is it the Lord's Day, Sunday,
true.
The Sabbath.
True.
It's also the 21st anniversary of 9/11. Absolutely wild time. And it's also the third day after the Queen died.
Uh-huh.
And all I'm going to say is, you know who else died 3 days before a Sunday?
That's right.
That's right, baby.
Jesus Christ.
White Jesus Christ.
So you never know. But it is a relevant day to talk about imperialism in America and for the UK.
So true.
So you know what the theme of today's episode will be. But
patriotism.
It's a good day to be an American.
Patriotism.
Before we get into that, though, I'm going to remind you all to go check out headintheoffice.com. We still have that promo going on.
Hit-o
Use
boys.
Hit-o boys. 15% off. All of your order, 15% off. So
that's right.
Check it out. Some people have been using it. Won't last forever, so get in there while you can. Check out the Patreon as well, though. YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Discord, Hit-o Extras, P.O. Box. All the information in the description.
Send us.
Check it out.
Very small packages. Maybe a letter, even, if you will.
A handwritten note, maybe. We'll make Gage open whatever we get in a separate room.
I'll open it in a secure room.
Exactly. Also, if you want to help out the show, you could always go and leave a 5-star review on Apple. If you do that, we'll read it on the show. And we have five of them to read today.
Five beautiful people.
Lengthy reviews. So, first one. Subject line, Unexpected by Bobby B. Wee Ho. They say, I have to admit, listening to cis white het guys talking about politics was the last thing I was going to follow on TikTok or listen to in a podcast. I've been filling my media with POC and LGBT voices all summer. However, watching a few of their videos, I found both hosts to be knowledgeable, using different perspectives, with honesty and sarcasm peppered in to make you smile, laugh, and nod your head. I agree. I'd have to
agree. I would like to say I'm one of the good ones.
Yeah. More people should be like me, really.
I'm one of the good ones. I'm not like all those other guys.
Moving on in this one, though. I finally subscribed and have enjoyed their episodes where their point of view is aligned so clearly with pragmatic, progressive, and leftist perspectives, understanding both sides of an argument, and know their political history to frame the current state of our government. I look forward to each episode to hear their take.
Excellent.
Thank you.
We appreciate
you. Bobby, thank you for leaving a review. We love you very much.
So much.
And you should take Bobby's lead, and all of you should go subscribe. Get us to 1,000 followers on YouTube,
facts.
Then we can monetize.
The one dude who came from Reels, because we know there's one person confirmed from last week's review.
One supporter. We got haters
on
Reels.
Oh, absolutely. It's awful. One supporter that came from Reels. Go follow the TikTok.
Yeah.
get to plug the TikTok this time. That's crazy.
Next one, though. Subject line, mask off support of class divide is my favorite by Gat Spider-Man. Gat Spider-Man's a recurring customer.
Thanks.
We've gotten a couple reviews from Gat.
Thanks.
We appreciate it, though, Spider-Man. This review is, though, as a welder who has to listen to the other route's argument about student debt, I would much rather have the funds to complete my college education and follow my life goals. When people make that argument, they're essentially saying the poor do our labor and the rich get to use an education to further their level of power over the poor. What blows my mind is when I hear working class people making these arguments. So it was refreshing to hear your take on last week's pod 2 weeks ago, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work. Information and education are our best friends to save ourselves, and creators like you are a beacon to spread them through. That's too kind.
So kind.
A beacon of light, hope in our dark world.
Yeah.
A small shimmering glimmer of hope in this nightmare we find ourselves trapped in today.
This void, this abyss that we've stared into for far too long.
Exactly.
Next one. Number one geopolitical podcast by Shawnee GG.
Especially today.
That's right. Oh, especially today. Geopolitics popping off recently. My favorite two leftist hotties. What can I say?
Hey, yo.
Easily the best political podcast out there. These guys have some of the best commentary out there that will make you laugh when you want to cry. Y'all are doing amazing work. Keep it up, guys. Arkansan socialist.
Oh,
I got bad news for you if you lived in Arkansas. Stay tuned to the end of the pod.
Nice. I got the next one. You got the last one?
Yeah.
All right, all right. Next one is, how are these guys not more popular, by Jojo Reed 693.
That's what precisely I'm what I'm thinking.
They say, I'll preface this by saying I've never really been a podcast person, but these guys are my one exception. As a closeted bi woman living in a very red state,
rough.
Pretty much everyone around me makes insensitive and alarming comments 24/7 that I have to just brush past for the sake of my own peace and safety. It's certainly lonely and frustrating at times, but now I finally have something to look forward to each week that'll help me laugh about the apocalyptic nonsense and stay informed. Their brand of radical centrism, as they call it, will pull you in and keep you engaged.
Hey, yo.
And the gauge in there was capitalized, pun intended. Anyways, 100 out of 10 would recommend. Thanks, Jojo Reed. We love you.
We do.
That was an excellent review, and I hope you're staying safe in your very red state.
Hopefully you can make it out one day.
Yeah.
If that's what you desire.
Hopefully you're not stuck in like middle America surrounded by red.
Just in the Rust Belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Going crazy, popping off.
Good luck and stay safe out there.
Thanks, thanks, thanks. Our last review, Hitto. A certified hood classic.
This is a certified hood classic.
By G-Force, Goated Movie. I found Hitto through TikTok, and I've been hooked ever since. I love how Jeremy and Gage balance coverage of the ridiculous and at times upsetting state of our country with humor and certified hood classics.
Yeah.
Thanks for keeping me informed and making me laugh during my morning routine. Two solid hosts from my home state. Shout out a fellow Michigander.
That's right interesting. There. I wonder, leave a comment below. Or hit us up on social media, something. Leave a comment on our video, whatever. Let us know when you listen to the episode, because I'm interested.
No, for real.
Because like when I listen to stuff, I'll have it on in the background while I'm like doing work or cleaning or something like that, or maybe driving somewhere. I wonder what other people are listening.
I listen to like at night is when I'm usually doing it, when I'm like chilling.
I wonder if people are like listening to us when they're fucking lifting some crazy weight.
Listen to us when they're fucking
deadlifting seven. Yeah. That's better.
That's better. This is where fucking just got us in the ear going crazy.
That's right.
They got the headphones on,
too. I wouldn't blame them. We're hyping them up. If you're doing that right now, keep up the good work, soldier.
I'm glad to see the good reception for the soundboard.
Yeah.
The soundboard has really been made a staple.
We're gonna spice it up pretty soon, add some new sound.
Oh, God.
We're gonna add some new stuff. But getting right into the news this week, the queen is dead.
That's right. Buckingham Palace has just confirmed that a second bus has hit Her Majesty.
And look, before we even get into this, we're going to be making a lot of jokes about this. But as Americans, I think we all have agreed over the past few hundred years that we get to dunk on the Brits whenever we want. They blew a 13-colony lead, and the Queen of England died, so we get to laugh about it.
Exactly. It's like a lot of people have been getting upset at the jokes. I don't know. I don't think our audience would be the ones, but like a lot of libs on Twitter and conservatives, weirdly, which we'll get into, have been very upset at the jokes popping off. And I just want to say two things about that. One, respectability politics is stupid. If you're here, I'm sure you understand that, because that's like the thesis of our show. Mm-hmm. And two, sometimes the circumstances surrounding one's life make it a little bit funny when they die.
Yeah.
Kind of like being the queen and being a low-key Nazi when you were a child.
Yeah, but and it's like nothing we say about her now is going to change the fact that she's in hell forever. Like, we're not going to make a difference at this point. Also, she was the queen. She had enough respect during her life.
Exactly.
Also, we're Americans. Fuck the monarchy.
And it's also like, She died of old age. Like, she was 96, bro. It's your time.
Right.
Like, motherfuckers say, like, oh, my God, death shouldn't be the sad thing. It should be a celebration. I agree.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going to laugh. That's why when I die, hopefully, if we are still niche internet micro-celebrities with the following, right, and we're still doing the pod, and I croak, I mean my untimely demise, I will smile. If there's an afterlife, I will smile down upon the brave soul that gets on Twitter, puts the Twitter fingers on, and tweets, A second plane has just hit Gage.
A second podcast mic has just impaled Gage to the fucking art. You know, this issue is definitely where you're going to see the divide between, like, libs and leftists.
Because
you can't be a leftist and support the monarchy in any way. Like, we'll get into it.
It's like, I understand people being like, oh my God, making fun of somebody dying. It's like, I mean, like, it's not like this was a tragic one.
Right.
You know, it's the fucking queen. She died and she was 96.
Yeah, and she was the queen. Anyways, getting into a little bit of our analysis here, I don't want to talk too much about, like, who she was as a person. We'll talk about it a little bit later, but it's kind of unimportant overall.
Yeah.
Because right now, it's important for geopolitics, obviously, because she was a head diplomat of her state. Obviously, the president of the United States interacted with her over the 70 years that she was queen.
There's some drama around that, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God. I don't know if we have it in the show notes, but the rumor has it that President Biden is not going to invite Donald Trump to the delegation to attend her funeral.
Well, that's, I wouldn't be surprised.
Crazy.
Also, Joe Biden's speech, or not Joe Biden's speech, but he put out, like, a letter, a press statement from him and his wife. I don't remember her name now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but
Jill Biden.
Yeah, they put out a statement together talking about like how distinguished she was as a diplomat. And it's like, I mean, it was a lib thing to do. But he has to.
It's like,
you know, he's a diplomat. He can't shit on the queen of the UK and have good relations with the UK.
Of course, she was a very well respected figure, a huge figure. She was the head of state of one of the largest empires in the modern world.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy.
Exactly. And now Charles, her son, takes the throne as king, and that guy looks fucking bad already.
Looks decrepit.
He looks like he's gonna die any moment.
He looks like what's his name? He died like late last year. It was Elizabeth's husband or something.
Oh, what was his name? Prince something.
Prince and no.
No, Andrew's the one who's implicated in pedophilia with Jeffrey Epstein.
True.
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but he also looked, he was a corpse for the whole year before he died. Anyways, though, there's been an ungodly amount of conservatives not only just coming out and supporting the queen, mm-hmm. which is something that we expected, you know, conservatives and libs, everyone's going to do it. Everyone thinks she's a big figure.
Especially after the Meghan Markle drama.
Yeah.
I don't know if we covered that too much on the pod or anyway, we've gotten a bunch of new listeners since then. But like back when that was going on, back when she left the royal family, conservatives were pissing and shit in their pants.
Yeah, no, they were mad at her. And it's like they haven't even come out in defense of the queen. They've come out in defense of the British Empire.
Yeah.
Not Queen Elizabeth, but the British Empire itself. And I wanted to bring this up because I want to get into exactly what the conservatives are talking about when they talk about the British Empire. And we have a Tucker Carlson article that we're going to go through in a minute, which isn't an article. It's actually kind of a throwback to the previous episode where he didn't write an article, but it was framed as an article, and it's actually just a transcript of what he read on national TV. But before we get into that, for those of you that don't know, imperialism, something we're going to be talking about, is the act of a country exerting its power over other nations or other people, usually through military power.
Yeah.
That's what imperialism is. So when we say imperialism, that's what we mean. Colonialism is a special type of imperialism when you use your power to occupy or settle in foreign lands, impose a culture and hierarchy upon an existing group of people, and usually exploit the foreign nations for their resources or labor or whatever it may be.
Big facts.
Colonialism is what originally Europeans did in the Americas and what we had continued to do over the last few 300, over the last like 300 years to the indigenous people. It's what the British Empire did a lot. It's what the French Empire did a lot. It's what every empire in history has done.
Always
does. As they're on their streak of brutality. But let's get into this Tucker Carlson article.
Okay. I'm sure some very tame takes.
Yeah, no, yeah, buckle up for this one, because this one's actually fucking insane. I'm going to be jumping around a little bit here, but just stick with me. Stick with me.
Okay.
So here we go. Let's start off. The British Empire was not perfect, but it was far more humane than any other ever. It's gone now, barely even remembered. Queen Elizabeth II was the last living link to a truly great Britain. Today on social media, the usual ghouls celebrated her death. Quote, may her pain be excruciating, a Carnegie Mellon professor called Yuja Anya wrote on Twitter of the Queen. May she die in agony. Various know-nothings in media, including a columnist at The Atlantic and a couple of employees at NBC News, seconded that thought. The British Empire was evil, they wrote, apparently totally unaware of what came after it. And speaking of, what did come after the British Empire? How, for example, did Africa fare after the British left? Actually, emancipation was bad for black people.
Yeah.
Yeah, freedom was bad for black people.
Guys, ignore the part where the British took literally, the British, the French, us, literally everyone in the region, every European power in the region extracted every resource that they could get their grubby little mitts on so that they could drain the whole continent of their wealth before they let them be free.
Also, just ignore the transatlantic slave trade. Facts. Just ignore chattel slavery.
Didn't Tucker say that the British had a hand in ending transatlantic slavery? That's like Charlie Kirk also got on and said some shit like British colonialism made the world better. And actually, the Queen of England oversaw the decolonization of a lot of these countries. It's like, all right, dog, hold on. Colonization is a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, I would say not colonizing someone is a moral neutral.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've colonized someone and you're trying to, like, do a little bit better, decolonizing them is not a return to good. It's not, like, a good act of itself. It's a return to neutral.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that you can never return to true neutral after British colonization.
After killing like 45 million people.
Because like, you've genocided the population in many places. I can't remember the exact ones. And you've drained them of resources. So they can never be what they would have been before you. It is a attempt to return to neutral. That's all decolonization is. It's not this good, great thing that she should be praised for. You should not be praised necessarily for doing the bare minimum in this instance.
Yeah. I wonder if like countries in Africa America that were previously colonized by the French or the British or whatever it may be. I wonder if they suffer now because these imperial powers came in, desecrated the countries, robbed them of their natural resources, and then kind of left, but then still maintained political power over these countries.
And economic power.
And economic power over these countries, and still to this day have like an enormous grip on everything that they do. I wonder if that's why these countries have struggled economically.
And I
wonder if like the rape of Africa is a well-documented historical event.
Yeah, motherfucker, Tucker Carlson and Charlie Kirk, the Charlie Kirk video was really funny, and they're basically the same thing, because, you know, talking points. They both said like some of the greatest literature has come out of Britain and the British Empire. Some of the greatest literature has also come out in criticism of British colonialism in Africa, like Heart of Darkness. Like, crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Go ahead.
I love the framing here about decolonization as if it's the queen doing this morally just thing to decolonize. She should be praised for decolonizing these places, and she's the one who chose that, rather than the people of these nations fighting for freedom from the British Empire. That's crazy.
Yeah. It is. The framing is very wacky on this one. Especially because it's not as, like, the Commonwealth still exists.
Yeah.
Like, her face is still on the money of many countries that the British Empire previously was, like,
nuts.
Directly related in. Crazy, crazy. Moving on, though, and I'm going to butcher some of these names.
Okay.
Tucker goes on, though. He says, let's see. Uganda got Idi Amin, who was a cannibal. Rhodesia became Zimbabwe and then became the poorest country on the planet under the racist lunatic Robert Mugabe. As of tonight, South Africa is still being run into the ground by an incompetent kleptocrat called Cyril Ramaphosa. I wonder if South Africa had, like, was an apartheid state a few decades ago.
Actually, apartheid was good for South Africa. Hear me out.
That's the take, is like, Nelson Mandela was bad. Apartheid was actually good for South Africa, but it's actually the black people that were racist.
Exactly.
Against the white people. Yeah. So it's hard to see any of that as an improvement because it's not an improvement. Sorry, Atlantic Magazine. And now, of course, the entire continent of Africa has a new master. The Chinese government. China is the latest colonial power to dominate Africa. It's bad when Chinese do it. But when white people do it, they're saving
the
continent.
It's completely fine. They're making it better, actually, because what do you say? The white people, the British, they brought habeas corpus. They brought the Magna Carta to these places. They never would have had freedom of speech without the British Empire coming.
Absolutely. It's like the Dennis Prager take from a couple of years ago where he's like, colonization for India was great because it united them under a common language.
Yes. Because
they didn't
have
a language before. They didn't know how to speak to each other before. Insane. Its subjects will be pining for the British soon, assuming that they are not already. In an ideal world, they would not be empires. No empires. Only sovereign nations. But we don't have that world. And we never have had that world, going back to at least the Assyrians 1400 years before Christ. In the real world, the one that we live in, strong countries dominate weak countries. And that trend shows no sign of changing. The very least you can say about the English is that they took their colonial responsibility seriously. They didn't just take things. They added. Yeah. They added the fucking slave trade.
Yeah.
They added the slave trade. Like, how are you going to say they added things when they desecrate? Like, this argument could be made for any empire that has ever existed.
Absolutely.
I can make this argument for the Mongol Empire. Like, they conquered basically the planet.
Yeah.
And they killed thousands, if not millions, of people along the way.
That shit is nuts.
This is just defending empire because you're cucked by any power structure that you see.
I also love how they have to get to a place where they can themselves justify the reality of the situation, so they called it. Like, they say, okay, yeah, in an ideal world, countries would be able to be themselves and rule themselves sovereignly, right?
Yeah.
But that's not the world we live in. In the world we live in, the strong dominate the weak. Saying that is reinforcing the idea that the strong must impose themselves on the weak, instead of saying, actually, you know what? Why don't we pull back a little bit? Why don't we stop being dickheads?
Yeah.
And why don't the strong help the weak?
I wonder if, like, over the last few thousand years, you know, the greatest ideologues came up with a way to prevent the strong from dominating the weak. I wonder if there's, like, a political structure, an organization of the government that we invented that would prevent, you know, make everyone politically equal, one person, one vote. Nothing comes to mind.
I don't know.
Monarchy is the solution in my mind. I think having a queen or a king, definitely a king. You don't want a queen.
I think the divine right of kings is the real thing, the mandate of heaven.
When the U.S. Government withdrew from Afghanistan after 20 years, we left behind airstrips, shipping containers, and guns. When the British pulled out of India, they left behind an entire civilization, a language, a legal system, schools, churches, and public buildings, all of which are still in use today. Bruh.
Something India never would have had.
First of all, that's presupposing that India didn't have any of this stuff before.
Yeah.
But also, he's referencing the partition here when the British basically carved up India and created what is now known as Pakistan, yep, right next to India. And they drew the lines, which displaced millions of people.
Arbitrarily.
But also, Winston Churchill famously starved like 4 million Bengalis because he was blocking off food supply lines.
Mm-hmm.
And he just started, he did a genocide, is what he did.
Crazy.
But that's
they're the
fine
most benign empire in existence.
Yeah, but because they left behind like some buildings that they're
not
going to
use again.
No, literally,
doesn't he go on to say, the Indians have never built anything as beautiful as this one building that the British left?
Right here, he says, here's the train station the English built in Bombay, for example. There's nothing like that in Washington, D.C. right now, much less in Kabul or Baghdad. Today, India is far more powerful than the U.K., the nation that once ruled it, and yet after 75 years of independence, has that country produced a single building as beautiful as the Bombay train station that the British colonialists built? No, sadly it has not. Not one.
And it's like, a couple things here. Even if it's true that India is more powerful than the U.K., which I doubt, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The U.K. with their closest ties to America, one, that's a quick tangent here, they are the biggest fucking cucks.
The U.K.?
We won the Revolutionary War. We kicked their ass, and now here they are. Look at them.
Yeah.
Look at them.
The one good thing the Founding Fathers did, push back against the British Empire.
Exactly. But, like, back to what I was saying, I highly doubt that India has more power. I'm sure that's just some great replacement theory shit.
Yeah, he's probably just because, like, well, India has a billion people.
Exactly.
And they're all non-white.
Exactly. And it's like, even if they did, they probably should, since they have a billion people.
Mm-hmm.
And the United Kingdom is a fucking island.
Yeah. Crazy. But also, first of all, a couple of things also. He's basically just saying white people buildings are cool.
Yeah.
Also, he's saying that, like, there's nothing like that in D.C. There's tons of, like, cool buildings in D.C. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Oh, facts.
He's just saying, like, oh, buildings built by white supremacists look a lot cooler. And brown people in India could never do such a thing.
Yeah.
Really fucking dumb. Also, he just claimed that Africa, countries in Africa, were worse off after the British Empire left. But now he's saying India was better off? Like, which is it, dog?
Yeah, hold on a minute.
Like, you're saying India is much more powerful than the UK now, but countries like Zimbabwe are now shitholes? I wonder if that's motivated by any, like, race rankings he got in his brain?
Maybe.
You know what I
mean?
You know what I mean? But also, by this logic, shouldn't conservatives, like, hate the Founding Fathers?
No, that's what it feels like.
Like, they would have been redcoats back then. Like, they would have been redcoat supporters back then.
Yeah.
They would have sympathized with the crown.
Yeah.
This doesn't make any fucking sense.
I just don't understand how you can both simultaneously be so patriotic and so just uppity in your support for the American Revolution, especially, like, all they are around 4th of July mm-hmm. time this past summer, and then turn around and have this take in almost the same breath.
Yeah, absolutely insane. Right before 9/11, too.
When, like, you're supposed to be patriotic. What about us? Are we worse off now?
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Are we worse off now that the British left?
So despite what they may be claiming on Twitter tonight, the British Empire was more than just genocide. In fact, the British did not commit genocide, except arguably against the Dutch during the Boer War. He's just saying when
white people
die, it's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the British absolutely committed genocide against other groups, like, many times.
It's
India
just,
being the most prominent example.
Every week, I feel like he gets more and more just unhinged
uh-huh.
and even more mask off. It's fucking insane.
Yeah. And he's referencing the Boer War here, which is where the Brits basically invented concentration camps as we understand them today.
Word.
But he's also obfuscating the fact that a lot, potentially thousands of Africans also died during that war. So Tucker, again, just running defense for the whites. That's the thing here, is that what rips through all of his ideology is white supremacy.
Like, I just don't understand how they're all defending the British Empire.
Yeah.
It is widely known to be just the worst thing.
The worst empire ever.
Awful.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's crazy because, like, through all of his ideology, how much he claims to love America, individual rights, freedom, you know, the American empire as a whole, he's, like, running defense for monarchs that were, like, axiomatically opposed to our freedom as Americans.
It's like, next year, is the new hot school board thing going to be teaching about British colonialism?
Yeah.
Is teaching British colonialism CRT now?
Right, right. No, exactly. Then he goes on. The British did give the world the Magna Carta and habeas corpus and free speech. They helped end the transatlantic slave trade, as well as the ritual murders of widows in India. Dog.
Wow.
As if countries that were being colonized by giant empires didn't already have freedoms? Like, you weren't already able to do things? And by the way, in countries like, because I know Ben Shapiro mentions, like, Saudi Arabia when he's talking about it. That's also a monarchy. like the any of the flaws that you could point to within countries of indigenous populations that you're invading and colonizing, the problems that they had was probably because of the consolidation of power that he is running defense for. Yeah. Insane.
And it's like they also run defense for her by saying that she had no political power.
Yeah.
It's like kind of. Not yeah. really, though. When you are the figurehead of a fucking country, mm-hmm. you have immense political power. While you aren't in the halls of Congress writing legislation yourself, everyone is basing it off of your opinion and how you feel about things.
Especially when
the public holds you in such high regard mm-hmm. and thus will vote for politicians who also hold you in high regard.
But it's also like she had a veto, basically.
Oh, she did. Yeah, like, she could veto anything.
Every piece of legislation that went through Parliament had to have her stamp of approval. Uh-huh. And to be honest, all prior monarch stamp of approval. They never really exercised the power to veto since like the 1700s or something like that.
But they could.
But they could have, yeah. right? They could have. And also they had the power to basically kick out the prime minister at any time, which hadn't happened since like 1830 something.
Which, low-key, shout out Queen Elizabeth for dying as soon as she met Liz Truss. That was yeah. another banger of a tweet that I saw.
True.
Real.
She should have saved Boris, if I'm being honest. Bring Boris back. I don't trust this Liz Truss person. But also, if you're sitting here wondering, like, as we described the British Empire, maybe if you hadn't known about that before, how, like, they could have done all this horrible shit, mm-hmm. Especially, like, things like the slave trade and the Indian partition, it's because a lot of the time, well, actually, for just about every empire that has existed since the creation of the British Empire, their rule and domination over other countries has relied on white supremacy because yeah. race as a concept, as we understand it today, really started to surface around the time that the Brits gained all their power.
Nuts.
They used the justification that the countries were invading, the countries were taking control of, contain lesser human beings.
They have bad culture.
Right.
It's literally how they justified it. It's their culture is savage. Their culture yeah. is worse than ours. They aren't as sophisticated as us. And then you see that exact same sentiment echoed by, it was either Charlie Kirk or Tucker Carlson mm-hmm. that said explicitly, some cultures are worse than others.
Yes.
Wild.
Exactly. Like, we have justified our invasions of other countries, our colonial methods of conquering of other mm-hmm. countries, because we think, or we have sold the public on the idea that because they're a different skin color, because they have different cultures, norms, and traditions, they are lesser than yeah. we are.
Which, because, to be frank, culture is just, it's just a dog whistle for yeah. race.
Yeah, and that has justified our domination of these countries. It has been, that was the justification for the genocide of indigenous people in mm-hmm. America. Literally, in the Declaration of Independence is the phrase, merciless Indian savages,
yeah.
as is it a justification for our expansion? And that's the same language that the British used.
And it's like, it's not that that doesn't exist today. Today in neocolonialism, neo-imperialism, we just see it, except culture is replaced with economics.
Yeah.
It's this
yeah.
country is poor, therefore we need to go in and develop the area.
Right,
because
exactly.
they can't develop for themselves.
Yeah, no, and it's like this, I mean, we are recording on 9/11, so it's part of the justification for the invasion of Afghanistan, Iraq, all the other countries that yeah. we invaded as a part of the war on terror was partially, we need to liberate them, spread democracy.
Oh, yeah, women can't drive here.
Exactly.
Women can't drive here. Look, we gotta go.
As if women could get credit cards on their own, like in the 1970s, in America.
Facts.
Like, as if we have a perfect track record of human rights in the United States.
As if in the grand scheme of things, the women's right to vote, women's suffrage isn't relatively new.
Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely insane. And also, just as a part of monarchy and empire, because this applies to the United States as well, and yeah. we aren't a monarchy, but as a part of empire is a necessary, it's just like expansion is necessary in order for the empire to exist.
It's an extension of the capitalist mindset.
Right. You are predicated on this idea that you have to expand your power and establish your power over everyone possible, or else mm-hmm. you're at threat, right?
Growth at all costs.
Yeah, your empire has the potential to collapse unless you expand your power as much mm-hmm. as possible, which leads to, you know, justifying invasions of other countries based on, you know, they're not white, so they're lesser humans.
Exactly. They got bad culture over here.
Exactly. Moving on, though. The British Empire spread Protestant Christianity to the entire world. It published some of the greatest literature ever written and produced the finest manufactured goods ever made anywhere at any time, including
That's
now.
That's fucking wild.
That's a actually. Crazy take.
I don't think I've seen something like, oh, look at this is made in UK. Like, that's a stamp of a badge of honor.
Uh-huh.
What?
Yeah. You think anything that the Brits made is better than this microphone I'm speaking into right now?
Not for real.
Crazy.
Not for real.
That's a crazy take, Tucker.
You think that the Brits make better cars than Honda?
Yeah. You think the Brits made better content than had in the office?
Oh, God.
I highly disagree. Respectfully. It was an impressive place ran by impressive people. We will see many empires going forward, but we will never see one so benign. And benign means like nice, yeah. gentle, kind.
Benign just means it just means nothing, like null.
Yeah.
Like a benign tumor is one that's not disease causing. It doesn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, exactly. The British Empire.
Yeah, right. True.
And then he goes on, that's true. And it's because it's true, the people who would like to run the world in a far harsher way would like to make certain that you don't know it. So they destroy the evidence that it ever existed.
Because the strong like to dominate the weak. And that's just like how those woke liberals and college campuses are trying to dominate you.
Exactly.
The worker.
But also it's like, dog, no one is ever going to forget about the British Empire because people are still reeling from its destruction.
And it's still there.
Yeah. And it still,
still
exists.
Still here.
And it still exists. He moves on. Here they are tearing down a statue of a British philanthropist in the UK 2 years ago. Then he shows a video and the philanthropist was just a slave owner.
Yeah.
Just a slave trader.
Wild.
Yeah, not a philanthropist. Wild. Destroy the statue. Erase the memory. That's why they're doing it. Slander the ruler. Discredit the entire period she lived in. That's exactly why they're attacking Queen Elizabeth tonight. Not because she was a bad person. She wasn't a bad person. But because she lived during a better time. A better time when, you know, black people couldn't like, exercise their right to vote. A much better time.
Love that.
So that that concludes our little reading of Tucker Carlson's article, or I don't know, episode that he dropped of Tucker Carlson tonight. Crazy takes all around.
Insane. I don't understand the obsession that American conservatives have with the British monarchy.
I don't know.
Other than the fact that they just want monarchy here.
Yeah, I really, well, I mean, that's it, is they want monarchy here. But it's also like this ideological support for monarchy is fucking insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't talk about loving America, loving freedom, loving decency when you are supporting a structure, a form of government that is necessarily brutal.
Yeah.
Like, there has never been a good monarchy.
No.
Monarchy is inherently bad because it is a form of domination.
Yeah.
It is one person controlling the rights you have access to, what you're able to do, what you're able to eat, everything.
All based on blood.
How can that possibly be? Yeah, all based on your bloodline. You do nothing but be born to be a monarch. How could that be a fair system? One of decency.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's directly related to white people.
And it's like, with regards to saying conservatives just want monarchy, Ben Shapiro gave the fucking game away last week when in his video he said that he was gassing up the queen as this like figurehead and how important she was and how great she was for the health of the country as a whole, mm-hmm. being this sophisticated woman in power, right? And then he says, here in America, that slot is filled by celebrity culture.
What the hell?
Yeah, he said it's filled by celebrity culture, and we have celebrities that will just say whatever they want and fill the woke agenda, and they just put a piece of paper in front of them, and they'll read it.
Bro, he just throws all the buzzwords together.
He just wants his. To build a narrative. He just wants his conservative celebrities. He wants the new conservative Hollywood. Shout out that episode.
Yeah, no, it's so stupid. That, like, what do you mean? Like, Kim Kardashian isn't a fucking monarch in America.
No, literally.
If he's making the argument that celebrities with massive amounts of wealth have similar power to monarchs, I would be amenable to that argument.
Then facts.
But that's not what he believes. Or if he does believe that, he thinks it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and it's obfuscating the fact that corporations operate like monarchs. It's these corporations that have more wealth than feudal kings and queens that have more wealth than them and have much more political power than they ever did.
Yeah, and I mean, corporations today are in a way more dangerous ideologically because we now believe that it wasn't the divine right of kings that got them there. It was hard work. It was something they did themselves. Like, you could very easily call out a couple hundred years ago, even if, you know, you got killed by the king soldiers or whatever. You could pretty easily call out, it's like, well, why? He's just born. He did nothing but be born, and now he has all this power over us.
Exactly.
Where it's like, I remember learning about how monarchs in specifically in Britain would trace back their lineage and try to say that they were descendants of Adam and Eve. That's why they have political power. And people would be like, you can't know that.
There's
no possible way you can know that.
Too. What if I don't believe in Adam and Eve?
Right. Like, well, that wasn't an option.
Exactly. Sorry.
You couldn't not believe in Adam and Eve.
If you didn't believe in Adam and Eve, you had to go to another continent and start a colony for us.
No, but it's crazy how conservatives are out here acting like they're like peasants from the 1500s.
Yeah.
Like, don't slander the queen.
You cannot.
Don't slander the queen. It's crazy. They just like reflexively defend anybody that's in power. Like, they have to.
And it's like, back to like the Twitter shit. Some of those memes were so fucking funny, dog.
Oh, yeah.
Those memes were hilarious. All the poor one out for the dead homie, and it's beans.
Yeah.
That's nuts. This is what y'all get for the, well, at least, my shoes are shooting ranges.
Yeah, no, I do not understand conservatives running defense. I mean, other than, like, the monarchy is synonymous with white supremacy, and of course they're white supremacists above everything else.
Yeah.
Because, like, why would they not just just shut up about this issue?
Oh, facts.
Like, they could just say really nothing and get away fine, or just be like, yeah, you know, she was cool and all. She could do the Biden say like, yeah, she was cool and all, but like America, you know, 13 Facts. Colony lead.
Woo!
But they didn't even do that.
No, they didn't. And it's also funny that all of them got on the timeline and started talking about, I can't believe the leftists, the woke leftists on here, the moralists would make fun of somebody's death. Like, how absurd. And it's like, I swear I remember last year some like liberal figure or somebody dying and them popping off on the timeline with the jokes.
Oh, fucking probably.
You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know who it was.
Remember what I'm talking about, though?
Maybe.
Fuck.
But like, I feel like as an American, I reserve the right to dunk on the Brits anytime I want.
Oh, absolutely. Will do.
Like, that's in my blood.
Facts.
You know what I mean? That's the only kind of nationalism Facts. I'm interested in, because I thought we decided like 200 years ago that monarchy was an inherently bad way to organize society.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that's what our founding fathers, you know, God kings of America, I thought that's what they decided, was that monarchy bad, democracy, or I guess if you want to say constitutional republic, good.
And it's like, speaking of 9/11, which is today, the day we're recording, Lizzie herself knighted the man in Britain who was responsible for, well, she herself was responsible for drumming up and getting public consent for the war, but the man who was responsible for the British invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, she knighted that guy.
Nice.
Like, that's wild.
Nice. Yeah, no, Lizzie herself, pretty awful.
Yeah.
Was. Pretty awful.
Past tense.
Yeah, no, past tense, because she's dead now. But I mean, overall, like, yeah, it's crazy that conservatives are out here defending monarchy.
I know.
As a social construction.
It's just they could have stopped at the respectability politics thing and at least like had a solid case. Like, it wouldn't be this big thing that we'd be talking about for a half an hour on here.
Right.
But the fact that they went so far as to say that the British Empire was benign.
Yeah.
That nuts.
Yeah, not only running defense for Lizzie herself, who, you know, protected pedophiles, was racist herself, blah, 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 blah.
Picture, hung out with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah, yeah. Not only running defense for that person, but also, like, defending the empire as an empire. That's crazy.
Nuts.
Absolutely insane. And you shouldn't do that.
Absolutely not.
Dear listener, you reserve every right, if you're an American, honestly, even if you're not an American, even if you're in the UK.
If you're probably anywhere in the world, if you or a family, if you or a loved one lives in any part of the world and the British Empire has affected you, you may be entitled to compensation.
You are entitled to go and dance on the grave of any dead monarch from England, and nobody can tell you otherwise.
You are entitled to go on our Twitter page, twitter.com/headintheoffice, scroll through our likes, and have a little giggle.
Exactly. If you're from the United States, Australia, like half of the countries in Africa,
half of the world,
India, yeah, most parts of the world, if you've been affected by the British Empire, you deserve every right to go over, disrupt the entire funeral, and make a mess.
It's like, you know how they say there's 6 degrees of separation between you and like anybody else in the world? Uh-huh, uh-huh. There's probably like 1 degree of separation between you and being absolutely stomped on by the British Empire.
If you're lucky. Some people are still alive today that were stomped out by the British Empire. Oh, gosh.
Anyway.
Right. Moving on to Lizzie Warren. Another Lizzie.
Concluding that conversation about Elizabeth, let's move on to a better Elizabeth. And today we're going to be talking about a somewhat more common Elizabeth Warren W. She just introduced legislation back to the Senate to end right-to-work laws.
Speaking of the divine right of kings and that just being translated to corporate rule. Exactly. We're talking about right to work.
Got to. So basically, she introduced the right to union, reintroduced the Right to Unionize Act in the Senate. This act aims to repeal anti-union right to work laws. Currently, 27 states have right to work laws on the books.
Including Michigan.
Ooh. Tomato, you're corny. Exactly. Ooh. So if you're wondering what right to work laws do, essentially, they make it so that even if a worker is covered under a union contract, the union cannot compel them to pay union dues, but the union must still represent them if need be.
Yeah.
So if a worker does not want to pay their dues, they're covered under contract, right? And they have a worker's comp claim, the union will have to fight for them, mm-hmm. no matter how much money they have to spend to fight for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure some of you can already see why this is a very bad thing, but if not, don't worry. I'm here to explain.
Okay, go for it,
We're here to talk about it, right? And so the reactionary gut reaction to hearing opposition to right to work is to think, I don't really think anybody should be forced to pay for something they don't want or care for simply by virtue of working somewhere with a union.
Right.
And it's like, makes quick, intuitive sense, right?
Okay.
Right?
Okay,
I understand why people would think that, but the context surrounding unionization is so much more complex. In reality, right to work laws function to bolster scabs and to the point where unions just can't function.
Yeah.
You are absolutely financially kneecapping a union if a worker can just reap all of the benefits and never have to pay into any strike fund. say? Because how are you supposed to meaningfully organize? How is a union supposed to have any bargaining power if their strike fund is completely depleted and they don't have the money to hire lawyers to help fight for their workers? What that's telling a worker who maybe is going to have a claim, like say someone is already disillusioned with their union, right?
Right.
And they get a workers' comp claim that they the workplace just does not want to pay out. And so they need to fight it. They're going to go to their union, and their union's going to say, hey, low-key, we don't really have the money for this. So they're going to hire a shitty lawyer, and they're probably going to lose their claim. But why did they have to hire that shitty lawyer in the first place?
They weren't getting their union dues in, buddy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And the way I like to think about this kind of thing is because, again, it does make intuitive sense. Like, yeah, why should people not have, or why should people be forced to pay something they don't want to?
Yeah.
First of all, if you're coming into a workplace that already has a union, you don't have the right to disrupt what they already have going on.
Oh, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you're kind of just screwing everybody over.
That's your right to work, brother.
And not only, well, that's the thing, though, is that the right to work name is already misleading.
Oh, yeah.
A more accurate name would be the right to freeload, because you still get all the benefits of working in a workplace that is unionized, but you don't have to pay into the system whatsoever. And that increases the power that the capitalist has in the workplace in proportion to the union, because there's less people that are within the union, which means they can manipulate workers individually a lot easier.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, people just won't join the union if they're like, oh, I don't have to pay dues, but I can reap these benefits, I might as well not.
Exactly.
It's like basic game theory. Everyone stands to, you as an individual, it's like what, the prisoner's dilemma?
Right.
You as an individual stand to gain way more if you don't pay your union dues.
Right.
Like individually in an isolated instance, but everyone is thinking that at the same time, and so it just breaks the union.
Exactly.
And then unions get a reputation in that area for being shitty and not really doing anything for the worker, but they can't.
Right. No, yeah, unions only function if enough people collectively decide to make them work.
Yeah.
And this is a kind of structural attack on unions because it incentivizes selfish behavior. It doesn't incentivize collaboration. And it doesn't even like empty the playing field and just let it, you know, be up to the quote unquote free market or free whims of people in the workplace. It directly undermines them and gives the capitalist more of an ability to manipulate the workplace.
In fact, the collective in collective bargaining agreement isn't just there for aesthetics, dog.
Yeah, no, you gotta
be a collective. You have to operate as a unit to get this done, right? And even back to the core issue of union dues, corporations and anti-union advocates love using union dues as a way to dissuade organizing efforts, and we saw it a lot during the effect to organize Bessemer, Alabama's Amazon distribution center. We talked about this again at the beginning of the year. This happened in January, right? Amazon was pumping out a shit ton of flyers saying things like, why would you pay $500 a year to join a union when you could buy a PS5 with that money instead?
Nuts.
Just one, already insanely patronizing. And two, that argument makes sense, but it's ignoring the reality of the situation. Oftentimes, union dues will pay for themselves, not only an increase in pay.
And more so, yeah.
Yeah, not only because of increases in pay, cold hard cash in your pocket, baby, but also in extra benefits and even decreases in workplace-related mortality.
Yeah.
Kind of a big one.
Well, yeah, because the better union you have, the more likely you are to have higher wages, better benefits, you're more likely to be covered with health insurance, good health insurance, and you're more likely to be able to advocate for better workplace safety regulations.
Exactly. OSHA, a good thing.
Those are all things that unions do, but unions can't do them if there's structural incentives for people to be scabs or opt out of the union while still trying to get covered by the union. Everyone has to work together for the I can't believe we have to explain this.
I know. That's
it's
what
fucking
I'm saying.
Crazy.
That's
it's
what
called
I'm saying.
A union. Also, I just want to point out the more like psychological element of what Amazon was doing. Like, they're telling you, they are anticipating that their workers are so dumb that they can be influenced by them saying like, oh, look, you could buy a shiny new toy rather than improve your workplace conditions. They are treating them as children.
Yeah.
And that's how bosses view their workers is we're a big family and I'm the parent because parents in a family have ultimate control over what their children do.
Yeah.
That's how they view it.
And it's just, it's fucking wild. And it's like, even to bring like a cold, hard, concrete example here, unionized distribution centers around the Bessemer, Alabama area were on average paying their workers about $18 an hour compared to Amazon's ununionized $15.
Yeah.
You can do the math. That adds up to way more than a $500 raise.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oftentimes within unions, even if you're paying like 2, 3, 4, 5% of your paycheck to union dues, the raises you get in comparison offset that and add more money to your pocket.
Exactly.
So
and
you're making
again,
more than you would without a union,
again,
with union dues.
Better benefits, less dying.
And you're
which is the ultimate
happier.
Price.
Right. Yeah. Less being in the hospital for 3 months.
Less being in the grave. Shout out Lizzie.
Well, because if you break your leg in an Amazon workhouse, you can't work.
Yeah.
they're not going
to,
like,
you're just done for. There's no union to help you out.
Exactly.
You just got to rely on a workers' comp claim that they might not even file because Amazon is awful. Right. But what about the proponents of a right to work law?
Yeah, we like to look at both sides.
I like to both sides an issue.
Someone called us radical centrism. Yeah,
exactly. So trigger warning, I'm going to read a quote from the Heritage Foundation real quick. Right to work laws reduce the financial benefit from organizing workplaces where unions have limited support, which is true. Like, that is just straight true, but we know conservatives are vehemently anti-union anyway, but I'll continue. Quote, this makes unions less aggressive and encourages business investment and creating jobs. States can and should reduce unemployment by becoming right-to-work states. That's their argument, straight up point blank, is that this decimates a union.
Yeah.
They are giving the fucking game away right there. Why would you support this? And I just want to put these claims to the test and look at the actual material impact that right-to-work laws have said with some cold, hard numbers. Mm-hmm. Haven't done this in a while, but decided I got to get
cold,
back into
numbers,
it.
Cold, hard numbers.
Right? According to the Economic Policy Institute, right-to-work states have 5% lower unionization rates. According to the American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Union Workers, in right-to-work states, they have worse benefits and worse workplace mortality rates. And according to the International Union for Painters and Allied Trades, right-to-work states have a 15% higher poverty rate than non-right-to-work states. Workers in these states make about $6,000 less a year than workers in non-right-to-work states and have about a 53% higher chance of dying in the workplace.
That's nuts.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. And also, like, back to this Heritage, the Heritage Foundation quote, their main argument here is that right-to-work states have higher employment rates, right? Less unemployment. The economy is not a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
Where are those jobs coming from? They are coming because corporations and companies can pay people less, which means they can employ more people because the positions that are getting paid are getting paid lower wages.
No, exactly. That's the point I have here because reading about this morning, right? And I was reading an actual like economics paper about it. Big mistake.
That's
They're
crazy.
Fucking awful. Yeah. Right. But anyway, it pointed out how right to work states have a higher chance of having firms open up in them. And to that, I say fucking obviously. Why would a firm open up in a non-right to work state when they can open up in a right to work state and explicitly treat their workers worse, explicitly give them less benefits, and explicitly pay them less, plus not have the headache of dealing with a union? That's perfect for a corporation. Of course they would want to move there, and of course that would affect unemployment rates. But is that really, are they really employed? Or are they having to work three jobs to support themselves?
Exactly.
The five poorest states in the country are right to work. 8 of the 10 poorest states in the country are right to work. And only one of the top 10 richest states, best states to live in for workers, is right to work.
Yeah.
That's crazy. The numbers, they're right there. Like, it's right there in front of your face.
And if this is still a little bit confusing to you, I like to think of it more like, theoretically, as like a balancing act, right?
Yeah.
Say you have a workplace. The power that the boss has over the workers is going to be directly and inversely proportional to the power that the workers have over the boss, right? So if the boss has more power, the workers have less power, and vice versa.
Yeah.
The only way for workers to gain more power in the workplace, control what they do, the pace that they're doing it at, how the revenue is split up, how much people are getting paid, workplace safety, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
The only way they can do that is with collective action. They have to come together to make things happen and shout as one, as a union, in order to make change happen. The boss just gets to decide. They have no one they have to rally around in order to make change happen. They hold the power over everything. Workers don't.
Yeah.
So if you want, as a worker, to be paid more, to get better benefits, to have a more comfortable life, you have to be able to unionize. And structural incentives that, or structural, I don't know, bodies, infrastructures that disincentivize unionization is going to directly hurt the workers and make business more appealing to capitalists that want to work in right-to-work states.
Exactly. The owner of the business, the C-suite, and the managerial class employees that surround them and uplift those bourgeois C-suite employees, they have so much more power than you do. They can individually make all of the hiring and, most importantly here, firing decisions that they want to, and they know that they can replace you easily because everyone else in these 8 worst states to live in is fucking impoverished and has to get a job no matter what. They have to put up with these conditions no matter what. It is only when the people at the very bottom rally together, when the managerial class and the bourgeois actually have to start shitting themselves, because while they can fire 5 people at once and just replace them within a couple weeks, if everyone just goes on strike and stops working for 3 weeks, they actually lose money. They experience the actual material harm.
Uh-huh. It's kind of like adding a filibuster to the workplace.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying?
Filibuster, not cool in the Senate. In the workplace, though?
No. It's like adding a filibuster. Like, right to work is like adding a filibuster to the workplace. Because one person can come in and just ruin everything.
Yeah.
Because no matter what a union says, like even if unanimously everyone in the workplace is like, yes, everyone who comes in here, everyone who's hired has to be a part of the union. Mm-hmm. In right to work states, you can't do that. One person can come in and just ruin a bunch of stuff for the union. It's the right to freeload. It's the right to not participate. It's the right to gain benefits without having to put any work in. And you would think conservatives that talk about working hard or pull yourself up by your bootstraps, they talk about that kind of stuff all the time. You would think they would hate the right to freeload.
Oh, yeah.
The right to do nothing. The right to not support your fellow American.
Wow, you're just getting a free ride when the union goes and fights your lawsuit for you?
Exactly.
Wow, lazy. That sounds like a lazy liberal to me.
But no, of course, they want to increase the power that big business has over the individual worker because they don't care about you and they want you to suffer.
And it's like a final note on this bill. While obviously we want it to pass, I hope by the reasons I've outlined here that you think this is also a good thing that will pass. Unfortunately, most likely, it's not going to pass at all.
Right.
Because this same provision was in the PRO Act last year, and a bunch of conservative Democrats said, I don't really like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that. What about your right to work?
Yeah.
See, they take these fucking slogans and they patronize you with them. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, it's, I hope that it passes. And something like this has to happen on a national level.
Yeah.
Otherwise, businesses are just incentivized to go to right-to-work states.
Exactly. And then the non-right-to-work states losing businesses are going to be like, hey, yo, what's going on here? And consumers are going to see that. They're going to see, look, all these businesses are moving because clearly right-to-work is better. If something is better for the corporation, it must be better for you, the worker.
Right, exactly.
But that's not how it is. Mm-mm. That's one of the biggest pieces of propaganda I've ever heard.
Right. No, and it's just like, I mean, when a corporation threatens to pull all of their resources out of a country and like ship it overseas. Mm-hmm. Like countries or corporations have done that a ton to the United States. They're able to basically make any demands that they want.
Yeah.
Otherwise the politicians are going to face punishment for not keeping jobs in their state, in the country, whatever.
Yeah.
So they basically can do whatever they want, make any demands that they want and just control what the government does. Unless we had like a global framework for not allowing capital to just leave whenever it wanted and leave places desecrated. Unless we have that, then they're going to continue to just have power over the democratic processes, over the will of the people.
Especially when you take one of these huge companies, like one of these like FANG companies that are so embedded in the stock market and our economic processes that anything that happens to them signals a whole downturn for the market and downturn for our economy in general. They are completely and utterly ingrained in the political process by necessity. If a unionization effort happened at Google, right, at the one I think happened in the Google cafeteria, but if Google was in a right-to-work state, that basically stifles any effort that the people who want to do the union put into it.
Right.
Because what's the union going to be able to do? And again, it's this vicious cycle where the union can't get anything done, and thus public opinion about unions decreases.
Right. And, you know, if you're a conservative, which I would be surprised if you made it this far on the pod, but if you're listening to this and you're like, well, then the union just needs to, like, do a better job at convincing people to join the union in right-to-work states, which, first of all, they already have to do that.
Yeah.
You already have to have more than a majority to get, like, an election through for the National Board of Labor Relations. But besides that, right-to-work regulations only give the boss more power because they can just fire and then hire a scab to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can just keep firing and hiring until they find enough people that will oppose the union, because those people don't have to join the union even if it passes.
It's like union dues are so important at the smallest level because of strike funds.
Yeah.
You need a strike fund to be able to scare the shit out of your employer, which I like. I like it when they live in fear.
Exactly. They should.
They should. I'm fucking Batman.
Exactly.
And they're those criminals at the beginning of the movie that were scared shitless of him.
Everything your boss wants is directly in opposition to what you want.
Facts.
They want to pay you less. You want to be paid more.
They want to pay you the least they can for the most amount of work.
Uh-huh.
You want to work the least you can for the most amount of money. Facts. I agree. Me too. That's why I do a podcast.
Absolutely. Which is why you should go check out patreon.com/headintheofficepod. Make our dream a reality and become a part of the community.
Go to headintheofficepod.com and get some merch with code HITOBOYS for 15% off your purchase.
Little hashtag ad for the middle of the episode. Moving on to Illinois.
Yeah.
So the purge is literally happening in Illinois.
Love that.
Right now. We all know the classic mantra, the blue states have more crime.
Well, they do.
Blue states want to defund the police so criminals can get out of jail and literally kill you.
Literally fucking murder you.
This is all obviously obfuscates that red states have more violent crime than blue states per capita, but regardless of that.
John Fetterman wants to end life without parole because that's an awful sentence. He's going to let murderers out on the street. Oh, no.
Well, in Illinois, the state legislature just recently passed a criminal justice reform bill called the Safety Act.
Oh.
A bill they've been working on for over a year now. Which reforms how detainees and people that are arrested are treated.
Okay.
The SAFETY stands for, and this is a little bit corny, so hold back your cringe. It stands for, quote, Safety, Accountability, Fairness, and Equity Today Act. That's wow. Right. It's an
Love
acronym.
That.
It's
that.
Not the word safety. It's an acronym, just like every other thing that's passed. The law attempts to make the Illinois criminal justice system a bit more equitable. And during hearings, the state lawmakers intentionally took a long time, like took over a year to pass this bill because they wanted to include amendments from police and other law enforcement agencies.
Oh, word. Great.
Yeah.
Great. Police also a unit that is separate from the judiciary. People seem to forget. Like police are involved in the criminal justice system, but at the very lowest levels. We all know policing is an awful institution in the way it's currently implemented in America, right? But it's also just so weird to think that police should have a hand in forming these
in lawmaking.
Criminal justice legislation. Because one, they went to some boot camp for like 3 months to become a cop.
Sometimes even less. Sometimes it's like a weekend.
Exactly. Sometimes it's a weekend.
An all expense paid trip of like just shooting targets. Yeah.
Yeah. To become a cop, right? One,
we're
that's
being facetious.
Awful. And two, they're executive. Like, it's not even a part of the judicial branch. You know what I mean? Just, like, if you want to get all, like, poli-sci 101 on them.
Right. And I think they included police specifically because they were making reforms like when police are allowed to use lethal force, what kind of holds they can use on people that they're detaining and stuff like that.
I guess.
Which is, like, still nonsense.
Still,
but
like,
I bring it up only to point out that police were not not opposed to this bill. And they actually had an active hand in creating parts of the legislation. So the arguments that I'm going to show you that conservatives are making are nonsense.
Okay.
Broadly, though, I have a quote here. The law, quote, establishes cash bail or abolishes cash bail beginning in January 2023, reforms police training, certification and use of force standards, expands detainee rights and requires body cameras on all departments by 2025. All seems like very simple stuff. The police are not being defunded. In fact, I believe this would add more funding to the
Absolutely.
Police because they have to get better trainings and certifications and stuff like that. So police are not being defunded.
Okay.
But I have a quote from the Hazelcrest Police Chief, Mitchell Davis, to make my point even more crystal clear. He said, "Let me make it clear to you that the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police are not against the Safety Act because we have put countless hours into collaborating with elected officials." Police are clearly on board.
Wonderful.
Clearly on board with this bill. So conservatives in Illinois should be fine with this, right?
Wrong.
They shouldn't be going out and calling this literally the purge, right? Well, no, actually, conservatives have taken to calling it literally the purge. And the most controversial part of this bill is the new cash bail system, or I guess lack thereof, because they're abolishing cash bail. Conservatives Wonderful. Have been going fucking nuts over the fact that bail will not be posted for people anymore, and they'll be able to get out based on a new set of standards. So let's get into it.
Do we know the new set of standards?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So right now, the way that cash bail works, if you don't already know, is that when you're arrested and detained for a crime, a court will determine, you know, like based on the crime that you committed, if bail will be posted or if you'll just be held until trial.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, when bail is posted, you just can't afford bail.
Oh, yeah. They'll give some 17-year-old who sold his friend an ounce of weed $50,000
right.
cash bail.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, they will say, like, you're going to be held in jail and we're going to post bail. And if you can pay this bail, you basically get to leave. As you can imagine, this creates a system where a wealthy person and a poor person could be accused of committing the exact same crime.
Mm-hmm.
But a wealthy person gets to walk and not be in jail to await trial. But the poor person does. Only for the reason that the poor person didn't have wealth to afford bail.
Especially when some people are held in pretrial detention for upwards of a year or longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only example I can really think of is, like, Gunna. Isn't Gunna in there for, like, 8 months before his trial? He got arrested earlier in the summer.
Is he in the... No bail?
No, they didn't make bail. Because it was a RICO case. It was a Fed case. Gunna and Young Thug could not post bail.
That's tough.
Well, they just weren't offered bail
That's tough. However, despite abolishing cash bail clearly being a good idea, something that we should apply nationally, Republicans in Illinois have been making it seem as though every violent offender is just going to walk free. And I have a quote here from this right-wing news site that I found that Actually, it had on the news site, it had a picture of, it had a map of the United States, okay?
Okay.
And it had an arrow going from Mexico to Illinois. And then in the top right was a picture of what looked like dollar bills, cocaine, and a handgun. That's all the picture, no words. That's all the picture was.
That's hard.
It was a hard
That's
picture.
That's hard.
Anyway, they said, quote, "The new Illinois Safety Act eliminates cash bail and allows criminals a get-out-of-jail-free card. The criminal justice framework allows kidnappers, robbers, and arsonists to roam free until their court dates." This is, of course, not true. Not true at all. The new system sets standards for pretrial release based on the severity of the crime, the potential for the offender to not appear in court, and the potential damage that the offender may cause if released. So basically, instead of assuming that everyone is guilty right away, and everyone should be held until trial with bail posted so only wealthy people can get out.
Yeah.
Prosecutors under this law will have to prove to a judge that this person poses a threat if they're not held in jail before trial.
Facts. So now some kid who went and stole a couple shirts from the Nike store isn't going to be held in pretrial detention for 6 months.
Right.
That's just a good thing.
Right.
They're not going to take a murderer who's just a flight risk, whose flight left before, and let him walk.
Right,
they're not
going
to let a terrorist go.
Right, no, because what they have to do now is a prosecutor, probably from the DA's office, wherever the crime was committed, will have to prove to a judge that this person should be held in jail until their trial. There's no cash bail system. The way that you get bail is by not having committed a severe enough crime to justify you staying in jail until trial. It's a fair system.
Yeah.
It's a fairer system than wealthy people who committed the same crime as a poor person just being able to leave. Like, there's no reason to rally against this. It's not as if, you know, you go out and kill somebody and you just get to walk free until your trial date.
Yeah.
It's you have to be proven by a prosecutor to a judge that you are a threat, an ongoing threat. Then you will be placed in jail awaiting trial. Nuts. That's all it is. That's all it is. And ending cash bail is good for a number of reasons. Number one, as we mentioned before, it's an unfair system, allows the wealthy to get away with what poor people might do, et cetera, et cetera. But also, two, sometimes people that are held in jail that didn't make bail or that can't afford bail, they stay in jail for months or sometimes years just to be innocent. Just to not be found guilty of the crime that they were accused of.
And then they get like a couple hundred bucks thrown their way.
Right.
When they get out. Sorry for keeping you in prison for this long. But
right, exactly.
Is what it is.
It's basically imprisoning people, even though they're not a threat to society, even though they didn't commit the crime that they were accused of, waiting for their trial for months. Because as we all know, the criminal justice system nowadays takes a very long time.
Quite literally, false imprisonment.
Yeah.
Which I think you're protected against in the Constitution, are you not?
I mean, maybe.
Maybe.
Someone want to fact check us?
I'm not much of a constitution head.
I'm not much of a constitutional originalist. But number three, to make a conservative argument, this literally saves taxpayer money.
Yeah.
Because holding people in jail is expensive. You got to pay for everything. Not that we treat our prisoners very well in the United States, but you have to pay for everything that is required for their survival.
You got to pay for all the administrative fees for the people that run the jails. You got to let them live lavishly.
Exactly. No, exactly. And like, this is just will reduce the overall burden that taxpayers have to cover when it comes to holding people in jail. And like, yeah, if you're committing a nonviolent crime, you shouldn't be held in jail if you can't afford bail. It's simply a good thing. And Illinois is the first state to do this in the whole country.
Wild.
So
very progressive.
It's only a good thing. And also, like, ideologically, this makes sense, especially for America, because we claim to believe in, you know, equal treatment under the law and a speedy and public trial.
Innocent until proven guilty.
Exactly. But this system that we currently have clearly runs opposite to that.
Yeah.
So not having cash bail is only a good thing. And the bill does a whole bunch of other good things, too. Greater accountability and higher standards for lethal force for the police forces. But overall, getting rid of cash bail is what people fear-mongered about, and it's not literally creating the purge. So if you see that, they're wrong.
Okay, I get why they were working with the police now. At first, I was thinking, oh, it's just going to be like a pure criminal justice reform bill. Like, oh, we're going to fix, like, sentencing laws.
Yeah.
But I get it now. I get it now, at least. Okay, but anyway, pivoting a little bit, I don't think that we would be head in the office, the podcast, if every 1 to 3 weeks, we didn't take some time to absolutely shit on the Supreme Court of the United States.
Yes, I agree.
You know what I'm saying? You agree.
Yeah,
you agree.
Absolutely. The Supreme Court of the United States, inherently undemocratic, absolutely abolish it, make justices be elected, and put Brett Kavanaugh in jail.
And since they've been out of term, since they dropped a fucking jaw-droppingly awful decision...
So many jaw-droppingly
just like horrible decisions.
Threats to democracy, yeah.
It's been pretty quiet on that front, but Chief Justice John Roberts decided Friday night to stick his little head out the trenches to go and speak at this like conference, right? And I've got some notes from a CNN article.
Is he trying to revive the image of the Supreme Court right before they're back in session?
Oh.
And then just pass out a dog shit ruling on Moore v. Harper?
Oh, Oh, just wait.
Okay.
This is a quote from a CNN article. Quote, Roberts would directly, without directly mentioning protests, said that all of the court's opinions are open to criticism. But he pointedly noted that simply because people disagree with opinions is not a basis for questioning the legitimacy of the court. Kind of.
Dog, what establishes the legitimacy of the court if it's not
opinion?
Like, if it's not people supporting the institution itself.
And it's like, this obfuscates the facts that the law is opinion anyway.
That is the
law. It's right. Opinion.
Uh-huh.
He then went on to say that it's the court's job to interpret the Constitution. Opinion. A task
power that they gave themselves.
Facts.
Like
facts.
200 years ago.
Anyway, it's the court's job to interpret the Constitution. A task that should not be left to the political branches or driven by public opinion.
Ah, okay.
Ah, right, because that happens.
Well, it's because the 9 Supreme Court justices are the brightest legal minds in the country.
And apolitical.
Yeah, absolutely apolitical. Brett Kavanaugh, one of the smartest minds in the country. He likes beer.
Ginny Thomas has not been personally connected to half of the organizations that have lobbied Clarence Thomas over the year. Literally, that's an article that came out this week. Nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts, right? Yeah. Again, continuing this fun train. Quote, acknowledging that last year has been difficult in many respects, Robert said he and his colleagues are working to move beyond it. That's the wildest one to me.
Yeah.
You're working to move behind the rulings. It's been difficult for you.
That's fucking crazy, dog. No, it's like where does the legitimacy of our political institutions come from if it's not the consent of the governed? Like, isn't that the foundational principle of everything we've ever done as a country? Is that the only way that you can maintain political power is if people consent to being governed by you? You don't get to just have power because you think you're entitled to it, just because the Supreme Court has existed so far throughout history.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, the Supreme Court has changed throughout history.
Oh, for
it
sure.
Has not always been 9 people.
Mm-mm.
This is silly. It's silly.
It's funny. And it's just like, I think it's so funny that he's the one saying it's been difficult in many respects this past year. Like, dog, the biggest thing you've complained about, because he opened up his speech talking about how it's kind of haunting to walk into the court and see that it's surrounded by metal barricades.
Dog, okay, you said innocence shit. Isn't enough to get you up on death row. You think I give a fuck how you feel walking into your
Honestly,
workplace? How do you think I feel?
In your workplace where you're making like $250,000 right. just to sit on here for a lifetime appointment for however long you want.
Just to cast down the most dog shit opinions.
Stripping people's rights away? And then he went on to say, he doubled down on it and said, quote, I think just moving forward from things that were unfortunate is the best way to respond.
Yeah.
Tell that to the 10-year-old girl in Ohio that had to cross state lines to get an abortion. Tell that to the 15-year-old in Florida who a judge told her she couldn't get an abortion because her grades weren't good enough
and that showed
that she wasn't responsible enough to get an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Tell that, you're going to tell that to them.
Yeah.
You're going to say that you need to just gather yourself and move on.
Yeah.
Because it's been really hard for you.
He's probably saying you need to gather yourself and move on because Obergefell's on the chopping block.
You need
block,
to gather yourself and move on.
Y'all need to get ready for us stripping away more rights, being even more absurd.
Y'all need to get ready to move on because we have some just great decisions on the horizon.
We're about to let Republican state legislatures just fucking tear apart the next election.
If you're wondering what great decisions we have to look forward to this next year, once the term starts on October 2nd or October 3rd, so in a short couple weeks.
Less than a month, yeah.
In less than a month, the Supreme Court back in session, baby.
Oh, we're going to be back in session, baby.
That's when we really start. Summer break is over October 3rd when the Supreme Court comes back. And it's also open to like public hearings. Like public can go in and view the arguments. Anyway, if you're wondering, what democracy ending cases are on the horizon for us this next year, let's do a quick speed run. So you know what you have to look forward to. First off, Moore v. Harper.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that one. We've covered it a bunch of times. We will be covering it extensively when the decision actually drops.
We're probably not going to get a decision for a few months, but yeah.
Exactly. But essentially what Moore v. Harper does is if they win, like if the state legislature wins, then it will make it so that state legislatures can independently draw whatever lines they want to gerrymander a map.
Yeah.
They can do anything and no oversight can happen.
Yeah, the Supreme Court's going to be considering a concept that I believe came up in Bush v. Gore. Another fucking fire Supreme Court decision. they're going to be considering the independent state legislature theory versus I can't remember the name of the other
Unitary executive?
Framework. Yeah, something like that. The independent state legislature theory basically says that each state legislature gets to decide how they assign their electors to the Electoral College, which if their decision falls on the side of that theory, then every state legislature gets to decide how they are going to send their electors to the Electoral College, even if it defies the will of the people.
Crazy.
It will basically give every state legislature the power to just overturn an election. And you can imagine how that's going to go, given that a majority of states, not a majority of the population, but a majority of states in the country have Republican state legislatures.
Exactly.
And obviously the other theory is that, like, no, you can't do that.
The good theory. Yeah. The good theory is, no, please, actually, you can't. We should have a little bit of independent
oversight
here.
Actually, you need
to
respect the will of the people.
You need to respect the will of the people. You need to not disenfranchise minorities. Mm-hmm. That would be a good start, please. There we go. But anyway, that's just one case that's on the docket for this next year.
Yeah, that's just one democracy ending case.
Next, we have a little bit of a trial run for Obergefell. This is 3OC Creative LLC versus Elnis. The court is hearing a free speech case of a Colorado-based web designer who says she should not be forced to create websites for same-sex weddings under state law.
It's the
law.
Fucking birth. It's the wedding cake.
It's the wedding cake guy just going to the Supreme Court.
Oh, sorry. That's nuts. Should not be forced to let black people use the restroom in my restaurant. Are you fucking crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to be around them?
That's absolutely insane. Right. Next, we have another case we've talked about a couple times. It's Students for Fair Admissions Colleges Challenges Affirmative Action. It's like somebody challenged Harvard and that's going up to the case. So now affirmative action is on the chopping block.
Is that I think we talked about that at one point. The dude Edward Blum, who's the one who responsible for gutting the Voting Rights Act and
it's a pair of cases. So there are two cases that the court will be hearing regarding affirmative action.
Great.
So that's fun.
And they're using an Asian student who was like denied or something like that, or an Asian student who claims to have lost their spot, like the model minority myth type shit.
It's an Asian kid. It's Asian students that are coming.
Or they're like, wow, now Asian students who were qualified for Harvard aren't getting in, and black students are.
Yeah, because conservatives are railing against that, being like, look at these blacks. Mm-hmm. Crazy, mm-hmm. crazy. Love it. I love it when white conservatives pit minorities against each other.
Maybe it's effective.
I mean, fuck, it's working for them. Anyway, next we have Merrill v. Mulligan. This is another gerrymandered case. The court in February ruled that Alabama state officials are not required to redraw its congressional district maps, which a lower court had said violated the Voting Rights Act by diluting back voting power. So the details are, the court's order said that state officials do not have to follow the lower court's decision while the case moved forward and agreed to hear it in the fall. The High Court did not say when they would hear the case, meaning that the GOP-drawn map will be used in the 2022 elections.
Oh, great.
Considering we'll hear oral arguments on this case before the fall.
Great.
So we should hear, this should be one of the first cases we hear. So that's exciting.
That's interesting.
It was ruled to violate the Voting Rights Act.
You know, it's interesting because usually the Supreme Court stays away from cases about gerrymandering. Which makes me think that them taking this case now reverses a precedent of them ignoring gerrymandering.
Yeah.
And they're probably going to fall on the side of gerrymandering for usually racial reasonings.
Oh, yeah.
Even though that is blatantly unconstitutional.
And those are the four big ones that I got for you today. I'm sure there will be more crazy decisions coming up this next
term. Gave you a trailer
of
the next few, next few collection of episodes.
Here's a little teaser for, I would say, the October. Well, I guess not. We don't have decisions till later. Till, like, I don't know, maybe the December through February episodes of Hitto.
Exactly.
So stay tuned. Big SCOTUS head. Stay tuned.
Good luck. I don't even know what to tell you.
God damn.
Good luck, brothers. Stay strong out there. Supreme Court, abolish it. It sucks. A democratic institution.
Thanks.
And actually, when people who hold enormous political power tell you, like, oh, this is just the way things have to be, they're lying to you.
They really are.
They're literally
lying
to you.
We, in fact, can change that.
We invented democracy. We designed everything that has to do with our country. We can change it if we want to.
We made up the rules.
Yeah.
Therefore, we can change them.
Yeah, exactly.
SCOTUS is not natural.
No, it is not found in nature.
Not natural whatsoever.
We didn't just, like, pull up as we were doing a genocide to the native people of this country, and then we just found the Supreme Court building. That didn't happen.
Dare I say even Brett Kavanaugh, Clarence Thomas, Amy Coney Barrett, Chief Justice Roberts, and the other two are not natural.
Yeah.
They themselves are not natural.
And, like, it blows my mind, especially when, like, liberals will praise this guy, or, like, liberals will agree that it's like, well, let's tone down the rhetoric against the Supreme Court. Let's protect our institutions. Because as soon as conservatives get enough power and the Supreme Court stands in their way, that bitch is gone.
Oh, it's just like the FBI.
Yeah.
It's just like there's. I saw a funny tweet. Speaking of abolishing things, I saw some conservative tweet the other day that, oh, leftists were all ACAB until we come against the FBI. Now they think it's good. No, I don't.
No,
absolutely not. I'm right with you.
I'm on the front lines, brother. Abolish the FBI. Do it. I bet you won't.
I mean, they're protesting with you in Phoenix, brother. Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Abolish it.
Look at a couple episodes ago.
I wouldn't suggest storming the FBI headquarters with a nail gun. That's probably a bad idea.
True. Real.
A nail gun is not going to pierce bulletproof glass. I mean, it moves slower than a bullet, but I wouldn't suggest that, but I'll be on the front lines protesting with you.
He's like, come on, brother.
Abolish the FBI, but not because Trump is literally a criminal. He should still be prosecuted.
Facts. And I guess to finish off the episode on a lighter yet still has very big implications for people living in these seven states we're going to talk about a little bit of student debt forgiveness again. You know we got to do it. Very relevant to us and our audience, I'm going to at least assume. Basically, if you live in these seven states, your student debt forgiveness may be taxed.
Income tax, baby.
And if you're wondering what they are, let's go. These states are North Carolina, Indiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, shout out that reviewer.
Arkansas Socialist.
Arkansas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and California.
Mm-hmm.
California. So basically what's going on is that most states conform to federal tax policy, meaning whatever the federal government considers income is what they consider income. All of these states traditionally have broken from that and used their own income tax model.
Okay.
That's why we see a liberal hellscape like California also saying that they might tax it. But California state officials have come out and said that they are working actively right now to repeal that and change the laws, and that no one will be taxed on this.
Yeah, because it was probably unintended.
It
on
was
their
unintended.
Behalf, right? They're
on
not
their
trying
behalf.
To fuck over little students.
I'm assuming that they'll be able to follow through.
Yeah.
Like, I would be very surprised if California ends up taxing that income. But the other states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Mississippi, haven't said anything officially about whether or not they're going to change their laws to tax it, but they still have time to change them. Indiana explicitly said that it will tax the relief. So if you live in Indiana, I guess just get shit on. You'll be paying like $320 if you have the $10,000 forgiveness, and then $640 if you have $20,000.
That's still crazy though, because they're gonna blame Joe Biden. They're gonna be like, "Look, Joe Biden's making you pay $300."
No, literally, can you believe that? Can you believe he's doing this? He's taking $300 out of your pocket.
I absolutely hate that, and I guess there's no way that Joe Biden could have insulated the executive order from that.
I guess they would have had to make a federal tax law or some shit like that.
Right. I don't think there's any way he could have got around that himself with the powers that the executive has, but that's fucked.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like students that have student loan debt already can't pay it back.
And it's like, how do you not do something like that and think, maybe this is a bad move?
Right.
Maybe this is politically bad for me.
Yeah.
And my representation, my chances of re-election whenever I go up for re-election. But also to note, that money does not get taken out of the debt forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Like, you still get the $10,000, but obviously that $10,000 is not in cash. It's a credit to your balance, to your debt with the government.
Right.
You just have to come up with the $320 to $640 out of your pocket. You just got to drop that during tax season. And for the people that needed this debt relief the most, that's awful.
Yeah, no, that is crazy, because I can't think of any other government program that we've ever done where we've done that to people.
Yeah.
Like that, maybe on like an individual state level, perhaps this has happened to other government programs, but like, imagine doing this to someone's like Medicare. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're getting X amount of money in Medicare. Quick, pay $600.
Oh, wait, you're really going to withdraw your Social Security benefits once you turn 65 or whatever?
Yeah.
Tax it.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I know a lot of stuff is taxed when you get it, but it would make a lot more sense to just apply the tax to the student loan forgiveness. So say you'd get like $9,700 instead
of the full $10,000. If you're even going to fucking apply it at all.
Right.
However, this is completely and wholly unnecessary.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
It's fucking ridiculous. And then speaking to Arkansas, the only comment that Arkansas made was that they would need legislative action to change the policy, and their next session doesn't start till early 2023.
God, they're on vacation, bro.
I think that's a pretty clear indication that they do not give a shit. So I'm sorry, Arkansas reviewer.
Yeah, they are. What is your state legislature doing? They're just on vacation.
Oh God,
they got the government on autopilot till January.
Who is out of session at this time too? Isn't it usually August where they take their vacation?
Well, that's what National Congress does. But in some states, being a state legislator isn't a full time job.
Is it a real job?
Well, it's not a full time job.
Wow.
States like Virginia pay like $1,700 or $17,000 a year.
What?
Yeah, it's just, it's not
you're
a full-time
just doing it because you're a policy nerd?
I guess.
That's crazy.
I guess.
That's bitchless, honestly.
Yeah.
Especially if you're doing it to then go and say that, actually, I want you to pay taxes on the student debt forgiveness. Touch grass.
That's crazy.
Touch grass.
Like, however many, like, millions of students you have in your state that are now going to have to pay that. Like, what's that money going to go towards?
Exactly. What are you going to do with it?
Uh-huh.
Fucking ridiculous. It's just going to go to executive bonuses. If you want to read up more on it, there's an NPR article. All you got to do is Google states to tax student debt forgiveness, and then it got it right there for you.
I hope y'all listening do not live in it. I know one listener lives in Arkansas now.
At least one of you, the Arkansas socialists, lives there. Tough.
I hope none of you live in those other states. If you're living in California, though, you'll be all right.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
You're chilling. You most certainly will be all right. Like, 99%, you will not have to pay taxes on that.
Yeah, but
you already pay outrageous taxes anyway.
This is a pretty bad news week, except for the first story where we dunked on. That's a great news week.
Thanks.
The day that news dropped, September 8th, I was feeling like on top of the world as an American. I was proud to be an American.
I didn't even give that much of a shit. Like, when I first, because everyone saw that morning, she was like sick, and I was like, that'd be crazy if she died, right?
You're clairvoyant.
I know. What can I say? And then I was sitting in class, and I got the notification. I was like, ayo.
Yeah.
And I started looking at Twitter, because obviously I'm Twitter brained now, and the memes were fucking going crazy.
Oh, they're
so
going
basically,
crazy.
That's to say, if this episode depressed you, again, I would implore you to go to twitter.com/headintheoffice and scroll through our likes.
Mm-hmm.
Glad Lizzie didn't have a second phase. Exactly. On her. That would have been nuts. you're the boss music, Moonlight Greatsword.
Look, we're Americans. We reserve the right to be able to do this. You blew a 13-colony lead.
That's the point. We fought a war for this.
Yeah.
I fought a war for my right to shit on your monarchy.
We're having a tea party now.
Exactly. When Charles dies tomorrow, I'm going to say
you're going to be arrested by Interpol. Take you to the UK authorities.
It's like that one person that tweeted in 2019, me and the boys when we kill Queen Elizabeth on September 8th, 2022.
Oh, my God. Well, I think that wraps up the episode.
That does. That wraps it up.
But before we get going, we got to thank the people. We got to thank our loyal monarchy.
Our financial
heirs.
Monarchy. Our nobles.
Yeah.
If we're the kings.
Our landlords.
You're the nobles.
Exactly.
That fill the ranks of our high court.
Yeah.
This is the high court here.
Don't be a peasantry. Don't be a peasant.
Exactly.
But still support the monarchy because we're the monarchs here.
Facts. Because we stand to benefit from the peasants. And by your proximity to us, you also benefit. You are the petite bourgeois.
I will say, though, I'm very upset that Lizzie didn't just wait 3 days to die on 9/11.
That'd have been so fucking crazy.
That would have been.
Oh, my God.
The internet would have had to been unplugged.
I was already sick when she was dying. I'm going to be sick later today, honestly, going nuts with the fucking memes that are coming through. But,
yeah, I'm sad that she couldn't just hold out until 9/11. That would have been hilarious.
Although it was really funny that Trisha Paytas, I don't know how to say her last name, her baby was born 3 minutes after she died.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Lizzie's been reborn.
That's Lizzie's crazy. Been reborn.
Anyway, got to give a special thanks.
In some ways, that's a fate worse than hell.
Got to give a special thanks to Cricket Scrapbook Layouts, Nikki Nine Lives, Caden Crown, Lord T, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, Talia Katz, 40% Spite, Andrew Harris, Mike Chaplinsky, Mattias T, John G, The B-Plot, Omar Zuno, Clayton LaFort, Ash Fairblood, Mark Yeager, Sarah McRoberts, Derek Messina, Dylan B, The Mind Sculptors, Kaz, Caleb Joy, Jim Bobs, Carl D, Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Meyer, Maldonado, Hunter W, Fergalaki, Max Vasquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mubari, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Megan Latow, Jeff Muzzy, Ted Cruz's Boy Toy, Bagel Burrito, and My Mom. Thank you all so much for supporting the show on Patreon. We couldn't make it happen without you.
Could not.
If you want to have your name shouted out amongst this impressive group of people.
Incredibly impressive.
These nobles.
The resume extensive.
Patreon. Patreon.com/headintheofficepod. Make it happen. Thank you for listening to the episode. George Bush is a war criminal.
Have a great week.
And we'll see y'all next week.
Shout out the Patriot Act.